You're with Indira Naidu on ABC Radio.
Welcome back and thanks for seeing out your weekend with me, Indira Naidu, on ABC Radio. Well, it's time to visit a far-flung part of the world now. And we're delving into the dangerous world of journalism in Mexico. Mexico is considered the most dangerous country to be a reporter at the moment. The 2012 killing of journalist Regina Martinez rocked the country, and just last month, three journalists were murdered in 10 days in Mexico. 8 years after the death of Regina Martinez, 25 media organisations have committed to continuing her legacy, and one of those organisations is The Guardian. Nina Lacane is a journalist at The Guardian, and she joins us now. Hello, Nina.
Hi, good morning. Oh, it's good morning from where I am, sorry.
Yeah, no. Welcome. Now, Regina Martinez was investigating links between organised crime and politics when she was murdered, Nina. Can you tell us more about what those investigations of hers were?
Sure. So, Regina Martinez, she was from Veracruz, the state of Veracruz, and she for years had investigated different types of links, the nexus between organized crime and powerful officials within the state. So those things included things like corruption, you know, like property deals, like public contracts, the spiraling public debt that was happening at the time. But also, you know, that when we talk about organized crime in that part of Mexico, across Mexico, we're talking about international drug trafficking groups and smaller sort of organized criminal groups. So the movement of drugs, arms, other sort of goods illicitly across the state and the country, and how that really is not possible without the complicity of politicians, security forces like the military and police. And when that happens, what you see and what she was investigating are the consequences, the violent consequences on the population. So the massive increase in things like the forced disappearance of people, massacres, beheadings, all sorts of real atrocities. And she'd been reporting, for example, on how really, despite the state government sort of insistence that everything was fine, that the state was peaceful, that communities were completely abandoned, shops were shut, There were gun battles in the street, there were bodies being hung from bridges, etc. And people were disappearing. And one of the key things that we found as part of the international investigation was that she had been investigating the dumping of bodies that showed the sign of extrajudicial killings into what we call pauper's graves, so sort of these mass graves in public cemeteries, where people, you know, where bodies or people who were unclaimed would be buried. But there had been this huge increase in the couple of years before her death, not of so-called paupers, of unclaimed poor people, but of, you know, bodies that showed the signs of having been killed by gunshot, either by, you know, criminal gangs or by security forces. And that, we feel, was like a real bombshell investigation that, at the time of her death, she was very close to publishing.
Well, there's a lot of powerful people then that she would have made enemies of, Nina. Has anyone been arrested or prosecuted for her murder?
One man has been prosecuted and convicted of her murder, but we are absolutely sure that he had nothing to do with the crime. He's in his mid-30s now. He's known as, his nickname is El Silva. He lived close by to the Regina. He was, you know, sort of mostly homeless. He worked as a sex worker. He had a drug habit. He was HIV positive, and he was just used as a scapegoat, really, because there was such an outcry when Regina was murdered. She wasn't the first journalist to be killed in Mexico, but she was the first high-profile sort of national reporter to be killed. And there was a huge pressure on the state authorities to, you know, to convict somebody. So they picked on this poor man, and we know we know for, you know, he claims, and there's very good evidence that he was tortured into making a confession, but none of the evidence stands up. You know, the state authorities painted it as a robbery that went wrong. Well, valuables were left in her house, you know, her jewelry, electronics, the house hadn't been disturbed really. And she was taught, you know, there were signs of torture. She was terribly beaten. And, you know, so as far as we are concerned, no, you know, that the case remains completely unsolved. Neither the person that killed her physically, nor those who gave the order for her to be murdered, have ever been brought to justice.
So, Nina, tell us a little bit about Regina. She was 48, I understand, at the time of her death. What else do we know about her?
So, Regina was, you know, she's from the state of Veracruz. Veracruz is in the south east corner of Mexico. It's sort of this long, thin state that sort of runs really from the south of the country up to the border. And she was, you know, from a very, you know, modest, sort of quite poor family, and had, you know, was a career journalist. She was in a state where a lot of journalists and a lot of journalism is really no much more than sort of official propaganda. She was a bona fide investigative journalist. She went out in the streets to communities that were far flung in the mountains, you know, in the in difficult places, and she reported on really hard things. You know, that there's a really sort of a sort of important case that she reported on was the beating and the rape of an elderly indigenous woman who managed just before she died, who'd been left for dead and managed just before she died to tell her kids that it was soldiers, right? And so she reported and investigated that that terrible killing of this elderly woman. And so she would go out into far-flung places and she would listen. You know, she was very much driven by social justice, by, you know, really sort of giving people who didn't have a voice a voice, you know. And just, you know, just physically to help sort of your listeners sort of picture her, you know, she was 4'11", she'd weighed less than 100 pounds, you know, chain smoker, and she lived in this like tiny little modest house which many of her friends, you know, urged her to move out from, you know, because, you know, she, obviously authorities, the state there had this really sophisticated spy unit, espionage unit. They knew where she was. She'd had people come and threaten her there. But she had this lovely garden, this sort of patio, which had lots of plants. And she found real solace in sort of being in that space. So she just refused to leave, you know. But she was incredibly dedicated to her work. A very, very private person, you know. But yeah, she's just really passionate about truth telling, about social justice. And I think that made her really dangerous to the authorities.
And Nina, Regina, really, it sounds like her work was her life.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we know, even, you know, I mean, I lived in Mexico for a long time and reported from, I arrived the year after Regina was killed and have reported on other journalists being killed from that same state, you know. And so I spent quite a bit of time there and got, you know some of her friends and colleagues, and they actually knew very little about her personally, you know. She and I think part of that was that she was very guarded as a protective mechanism. She didn't let people in, you know, because she didn't want to put other people at risk. She knew what she did was risky, right? And she never told her family much about it, you know. And so I think just, you know, some people are just more private than others, right? So people don't know that much about her personal life. And which is why, again, you know, the sort of theory that the state put forward in terms of this robbery, that she'd fallen in love and this was like a crime of passion, and then they talked about it being robbery, was just utter nonsense, right? Everybody and anybody that knew her knew that wouldn't have happened to her. You know, she would not have behaved in that way. But yeah, she was just, her work was everything to her. She was an absolutely committed journalist.
So, Nina, how dangerous is it being a journalist in Mexico, particularly in this Veracruz area?
I mean, you know, I lived there for almost 7 years, and just seeing your colleagues, my Mexican colleagues, being picked off one by one was just utterly horrific, you know, and that's what it felt like. I mean, just since we published this big story last Sunday, another journalist has been killed. A photojournalist was shot dead 3 days ago in a different state. I mean, it really is. I mean, the official figure that we used was a figure used by the Committee to Protect Journalists, which is 119 journalists in the last 20 years. But there have been many more than that. That is just the number of journalists that the CPJ has been able to verify to their satisfaction that they were killed specifically because of links to their reporting or to their, you know, to their journalism. Many more have been killed by that, but then than that. And I'm sure in some local areas we don't even find out about the deaths. I mean, it really is. And you know, friends of mine, you know, you can hear that I'm British. You know, like, I mean, I covered Mexico and Central America for a long time, and my friends would often ask back in England, you know, why is it that there are so many corrupt people or these things happen? It's, and underlying it all is impunity. You know, that the fact is there are no consequences for targeting journalists, you know, in the same way that, you know, violence against women is so terribly high because there are no consequences. Again, the CPJ says that, 90% of crimes against journalists are unresolved.
Right, I was going to ask you that. It's so high, 90%.
I mean, I think that is a massive underestimate, you know, because the few people that have been prosecuted for killing journalists, it's only ever those that pulled the trigger, you know, or strangled the person, the actual sort of physical killer. If we think about, you know, the masterminds behind these crimes, those that ordered, paid for and benefited from these crimes, I would say we're at 99%, you know. And so impunity is what breeds crime. Impunity is what drives crime, and killing a journalist is such a high impact crime. You know, it has such a devastating effect on democracy, you know, when you kill those people who are there telling the truth about what is going on in government, in society, on the streets.
For our international cross tonight on Nightlife, we're talking to journalist at The Guardian, Nina Lacane, about the terrible deaths of journalists in Mexico. 119 journalists have been killed since 2000, and we're particularly focusing on Regina Martinez, where a number of media organisations, 25, have committed to continuing her legacy. And particularly in the area, Nina, the journalists who are most vulnerable, like Regina, are investigating narco-politics. They're most at risk, aren't they?
That's right. So all of the sort of analysis of, you know, crimes against journalists, and it's not, you know, obviously we focused on the murders, you know, but there it's much wider than that. It's threats. It's, you know, intimidation online and physical, you know, and many more journalists than are killed stop practicing journalism, stop doing their work because of these threats. Or, you know, the day that Hina was killed, you know, in the following days, a couple of dozen of her colleagues left the state of Veracruz, right, and have never returned. So all of that loss as well. And yeah, all of the analysis, and this is across, you know, in Mexico, but in across the world, and certainly Latin America, in other places as well, it's those that are investigating that nexus between corrupt officials, politics, you know, and organised crime that are most likely to be targeted. You know, actually, those journalists that are reporting just on, you know, narcos or other organised crime groups can be targeted, but it's a much, much smaller number. It's that nexus, right? And that nexus is what shows us that and demonstrates and tells us that without the complicity, like, overt and implicit of the state, and that's high-level politicians, security forces, prosecutors, judges, all of what, you know, all of those state institutions, they, you know, organized crime couldn't work, right? It couldn't exist. How do you move masses of drugs, or how do you move weapons, or smuggle people across countries and borders? You have to be working with state officials and state structures at the highest level, and that is what is, you know, time and time again been shown to be most dangerous. And what the state likes to do in any high profile killing, whether it's a journalist or a politician or an activist, they put the blame on organised crime, right? It's like, oh yeah, it was, you know, but that it just simply isn't true. The facts just don't bear that out.
Mm. Now, 60 reporters or so from around the world, Nina, have been investigating Rahina's death, and they've formed, part of this cartel project to spearhead these investigations. Can you tell me about the cartel project?
Sure. So the cartel project is the latest sort of project that has, been organised and coordinated by a collective called Forbidden Stories. And Forbidden Stories is a Paris-based sort of network, a collective of journalists that was founded after the death of, or the killing of, Maltese journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia, who was killed with a car bomb while she was a journalist. She was killed in 2017, and she was a journalist who had been investigating this narco politics in Malta for many, many years, had been threatened many times. And she was, the first journalist in Europe to be killed in a long time. And so Forbidden Stories was born out of that. The Daphne Project, which some of your audience might have heard of, was one of the Forbidden Stories projects. And so the Cartel Project is the latest and certainly the most ambitious project coordinated by Forbidden Stories. And yeah, like you say, it was like a multi-part investigation. What part of that was obviously looking at the Rahina's murder. I trying to investigate the cold case. Like I said, we consider this case to be unsolved. What she was working on at the time, looking at the motives and the conditions in which she was murdered, and who she was threatening in terms of the politicians, the governors, ex-governors there in a circle. And to be honest, we barely touched the surface. There are many names in my head right now of high-ranking officials that I'm sure were involved in some way, if in her crime, in many of the other crimes sort of that created this sort of, nightmare within the state of Veracruz that we haven't been able to name yet, but that was a big part of the investigation. But we also, the part in the team, investigated other sort of elements. So the second day of our stories was espionage, the use of spyware in Mexico and how that is used. Spyware sold by international companies to Mexico often ends up being in the hands of cartels, but also being used to target journalists. So in the case of Rahina in Veracruz, I was able to identify through my contacts, this sophisticated high-tech espionage unit, which has thousands of informants across the state, as well as more recently this sort of high-tech spyware, which is used to target what they consider to be political enemies, journalists, activists, political opponents. Also, we did an investigation on the international arms trade, how in the last 15 years, what violence and homicides have escalated to sort of shocking, eye-watering levels in Mexico, coincides with the big, huge increase in the sale of guns and weapons by international, from European and Israel, European companies and Israeli companies to Mexico, and how almost every journalist that's been killed in Mexico in the last 15 years has been killed by a foreign gun, a gun sold by a foreign country. Mm-hmm. And the last part of the investigation was looking at the big rise in synthetic drugs, things like fentanyl and other, and methamphetamine, and how those sort of links, in Asia as well as in Europe, how the Mexican cartels are linked to that sort of and are benefiting and profiting from that sort of international trade. So it was a multifaceted sort of investigation.
Yes, and Nina, are you finding that journalists banding together like this under the Forbidden Stories umbrella, are you able to elicit more information behind the scenes of what went on in a number of these cases because of that?
Yeah, we really are. I mean, I think it's, you're putting all these heads together, right? So we all come with different experiences, different contacts, different strengths, So for example, in the case of Rahina, our partners in Spain, in Barcelona, really focused on investigating the alleged corruption of a former governor of Veracruz, who Regina had investigated hugely, and who ended up as a consul in Barcelona, right? And so he was, our partners there were really able to sort of focus in on the alleged sort of networks of corruption that sort of surrounded him in that time. My experience for Mexico was obviously really, that was really helpful because most of our partners had never been to Mexico, never worked in Mexico. And, this is really, really vital stuff because, this is the stuff that gets journalists killed in Mexico, that gets our colleagues killed. So in a way, it's where we're sharing the workload, but we're also sort of trying to share some of the burden, the risks that go with it, And so, the arms trade stuff, the espionage stuff, the synthetic lab stuff, we would never have been able to uncover what we did without our colleagues in Israel, in India, in China, in Italy, it was really a collaboration, a true collaboration. And I think the work shows the benefits of working in that way. But also, I think a lot of this is about sharing risk, with our colleagues, and I feel like as journalists, journalists, especially from so-called sort of safe countries, we have a responsibility to our colleagues in countries like Mexico, Honduras, in many other countries where journalists are facing life-threatening risks every day, to pool our resources together as a community, and to really help to make sure that when journalists are threatened, when they're killed, when they're attacked, that the stories don't die. This whole idea of you can't kill the truth, you can kill a single journalist, but you will not kill the truth. And I feel like we really have a collective responsibility to do that. And this is what Forbidden Stories and this sort of initiative is about.
Mm. And Nina, it's not only journalists, as you've mentioned earlier, that are being targeted. There have been thousands of people, including children, who just vanished, the disappeared. 73,000 people have gone missing. What kind of toll does that take on the victims' families?
I mean, you're talking about, a war that isn't called a war. I think that, these are communities and a society that is highly traumatized, when you're living, with such high levels of violence and impunity, where actually the people that the institutions that are meant to be there to protect you as a, as a citizen, the police, prosecutors, army, are the ones that are involved in committing these crimes. I mean, it's really like being at constant war without it being called a war, and I think that ordinary people, journalists, my colleagues in Mexico are highly traumatized. And how do you come out of that, right? It's still going on. Like I said, another journalist was killed just in the past few days. The 73,000 forcibly disappeared people is just the best guesstimate that we have. We don't really know. It could be many more than that. 300,000 Mexicans have been killed, murdered in the past 15 years. I mean, until there's some acknowledgement, at least, you can't have justice. You can't come to terms with and resolve this sort of anguish and trauma without at least some acknowledgement that it's happening, that it exists, and for it to stop. But there's no signs of it stopping, the sort of the violence just continues. And I think we're talking about in Mexico, but all, many parts of the region where I worked, really traumatized societies, communities, and, groups of people.
Mm. Well, Nina, the Forbidden Stories and the Cartel Project are an important way to start, exposing the truth and breaking the silence and the corruption.
Absolutely, yeah. And, I encourage everyone to have a look wherever you are. We published the big piece on Regina a week ago today, and then we published three more investigations in conjunction with Forbidden Stories. Or have a look on Forbidden Stories website. So please, I think as your listeners, as the public, we have a responsibility to inform ourselves, you know, and see what role our governments or others are playing in this, you know, because there is international complicity in this as well, of course, you know. And I think, I'd encourage everyone to have a look when they can.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina, for joining us on Nightlife tonight. Nina Lekane is a journalist at The Guardian, talking about the violence particularly directed at journalists in Mexico.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.